He was the most mature 19-year-old I've ever played with. It's hard to imagine he's that young. When you see him swing the bat, it's like you think he's 25, 26.
It is Baseball America Hot Sheet, Scotty Braun, and Baseball America's J.J. Cooper and Ben Badler. This is the final show of the 2024 year. Of course, we'll be back in 2025, but I want to kick it quickly to J.J. because the 2025 handbook is available for pre-order, and put a little bit of sweat and work into that one. So give it some love, J.J.
Sure. So the good news is we have sent the 2025 prospect handbook to the printer. That means that we should hopefully have it in hands of people who order from us quicker than last year by several weeks. And if you order it from us, we are also sending out digital editions now. So you can actually start reading your prospect handbook. There are people who are literally reading the prospect handbook. Although I do want to say with the holidays, I'm not promising you, that it's not automatic. I actually send you that. So it may take a few days right now. But yes, so we have top 30s with full reports for all 30 teams, depth charts, and it's the 25th anniversary of this, the 25th edition of the book. We have now been ranking prospects long enough that we're going to start seeing prospect handbook prospects appear in the Hall of Fame in the next few years. But yes, a lot of work, but a lot of fun also. It's why we do what we do at Baseball America.
That's awesome. Well, congrats, obviously, on a big accomplishment, and we're excited to see it, in its physical form. But for now, the digital form, go get after it. You know where to find it. Hit up baseballamerica.com. Now let's hit the first move. What do we have here? We have trades, but the one that we want to focus on, because there was a lot of activity from the weekend, is the deal that sends Jesus Luzardo and Paul McIntosh to the Phillies for Starlin Cava and Marion Boyd. So, JJ, I'll let you start, and Ben, you can piggyback off this, but here we go with the Marlins teardown, and the Phillies this time get to benefit from, a Jesus Luzardo addition that could be a nice fit for them in the middle of their rotation.
I'm not a big fan of this trade for the Marlins, and that's not because I think Starlin Cava, we have Starlin Cava in our top 100. We think Starlin Cava is the best defensive shortstop in the minors. We put an 80 on his defense in our tools grades. That's the only one we have for a shortstop anywhere in the minors. Really good prospect, obviously far away. Spent last year reaching low A. So you're talking about several years away. But the thing I'm really kind of struggling with here, and I kind of wonder what Ben thinks also, but to me, the problem I have with it is I feel like that this is a teardown that it's kind of trading Luzardo at a time. Obviously, there could be worse times to trade Jesus Luzardo. Jesus Luzardo is an injury risk. If he gets hurt in April, obviously you've lost a lot of value of him. But at the same time, if he goes out and has a good April and May, you would also probably be able to trade him for more than you trade him now. And when you look at this kind of from the big picture, I just struggle to see kind of what's the end goal here with the Marlins other than getting younger and cheaper, because this is not a good farm system right now, even after all the trades that they've made. This is not a team that has, a couple of years ago, you could say that they had a great rotation. That's kind of was their calling card is, hey, we have a rotation that's better than other teams. That allows us to maybe kind of punch above our weight a little bit. Can't really say that now after all the trades. Kind of wonder with this, does this mean that Sandy Alcantara is the next guy up if he shows he's healthy? Ben, can you point to a point in the future where we're looking for if you're a Marlins fan, or is this more of like the future just gets pushed further and further away?
Not a lot of optimism right now in Marlins land based on a combination of major league team and a farm system that, for a team that is tearing it all down, is probably ranked in our 20s right now in our farm system rankings. But, as far as this trade specifically, if you can guarantee me that the Phillies are going to get 2 years of the 2023 version of Jesus Luzardo, then the Marlins didn't get enough in return. He was a four war pitcher that year, 3.58 ERA, 178 innings. But last year, I guess this year, 2024, he really wasn't that guy. He had a 5 ERA, his strikeout rate declined, his walk rate ticked up a little bit, and he only made 12 starts. He had elbow, back injuries. This is a guy who's had Tommy John in his past already, so durability has already been a question mark for him. So to me, if you're the Marlins, I see this trade as really a bet against Jesus Luzardo, because if he comes back, JJ, like you said, and you're at the All-Star break and he's pitching like he was in 2023, yeah, I mean, you might get a, maybe not the exact type of return that Garrett Crochet got, but you might be getting that, you know, certainly a better return than what they got right now. But if he comes back next year at the All-Star break and he's pitching, you know, like he did in, you know, in 2024, and he's just unable to stay on the field, you're not going to get a top 100 prospect for him, period. So I think a lot of this trade is a bet on what the Marlins see from Jesus Luzardo going forward. And, you know, obviously they have a lot more info than we do on his medicals.
Yeah, so it sounds to me like they played it safe, or they were afraid of previous arm issues and they figured they'd cash out now. It's certainly not an expensive pitcher. He's due about $6 million, depending on how arbitration goes. So, Ben, what do you think about Caba? I mean, do you think this is a guy who could be, obviously on the defensive side, it sounds like an elite shortstop, but is he going to hit enough?
Yeah, I mean, I think the question with him is just, you know, how strong is he going to get? How much damage is he going to grow into? Because right now, yeah, I mean, it's bottom of the scale power, but he's, you know, he's a pretty thin-framed 18-year-old kid, right? If he was in the draft, he'd be, you know, a high school senior. He would have been a first-round pick this year, I think, pretty comfortably, right? So you have elite defense at shortstop. And at the plate, yeah, maybe like the numbers don't jump off the page at you right now, but it's pretty elite back control. He rarely swings and misses. He's a switch hitter, pretty compact stroke from both sides, and he's very patient too. So he's going to have to grow into more power. Optimistic that hopefully he can, certainly if you're the Marlins, but you know, he's 5'9". He's not that big of a guy. That's certainly the big risk with him, but there is a good foundation of back control and strike zone judgment with him.
The only thing I would just add to that is that you are talking about a guy here with the defense he has. He's going to find his way to the big leagues in some way, shape, or form. If you're a Marlins fan, you're looking at this, you say, okay, I feel pretty comfortable he could be a Miguel Rojas. Now, if you're a Marlins fan, you want more than that. And I think that there could be more than that. But that's kind of where the bat, kind of the lower end of the bat, is that the defense is so good. The contact ability is good. If, like Ben says, if he does start to fill out, if he does add some more power, then you could go beyond that. I don't want to say his floor is Miguel Rojas. This is the guy who's still multiple levels away from the big leagues. But that's kind of I would say, you're looking at realistically the way he should develop. You're hoping for that, and then you're hoping to get more than that, I would say.
Mm-hmm. All right, and also I'll finish with this. Marlins fans, tough times. I feel for you. I lived down there for a chunk of time, and it ain't fair, but there's not much you can do about it right now, so we'll at least talk up the prospects and see what they've got. All right, let's go to some rosier times, as we've got a guest joining us right now ready to go. You saw him on Foul Territory last week, and we, of course, wanted to get him on Baseball America Hot Sheet to dive into his new organization. Kyle Teal joining us right now, Chicago White Sox catcher in the org. Kyle, great to see you again, man. I appreciate the time.
Great to see you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, you know, you don't know how much this means, and maybe you do, right? For White Sox fans that have gone through it a little bit the past couple seasons, to see a guy come through here, to get to know him well. Obviously, you know, your interview was well-received last week, so I want to thank you again here as we hit the holiday. But before these guys dive into the nitty-gritty, tell me what it's been like, even since we spoke, for you to be a part of the White Sox organization. I mean, who do you talk to? What else have you learned about the franchise? What else do you know about the team, even from an organizational standpoint, if at all? Like, when you get traded to a team like this, do you check out their Baseball America top prospects and say, all right, what am I working with here? Who am I going to be catching?
Yeah, I mean, I've reached out to a few guys, like, for example, Matt Theis. I've talked to him, a former UVA catcher, so we got that in common. And just talk to a few other guys on the team, just DMs on Instagram mostly. And then I talked to some of the coaches and just trying to figure out when I'm going to get down for spring training. So that's been the big thing.
So, Kyle, I wanted to talk to you kind of about your progression as a catcher. You know, if you go back to high school, if I remember right, you played catcher, but you played pretty much everywhere, shortstop, pitched, a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. How, you know, as you kind of embraced the grind that is being a catcher, kind of, if you look at now where you are compared to where you were coming out of high school, What do you wish you had known back then that you know now? What, you know, how have you developed as a catcher to like, man, now I kind of realize that this is a key to it?
So the one thing I would say that I wish I knew in high school, like I wish I knew the whole left knee down, right knee down stance. I was on 2 feet as a high schooler behind the plate, and I feel like as a professional baseball player and in college, going to that one knee down just amplified my game when it came to receiving, blocking, and throwing. I'm way more flexible down there, and it's just such a better position to receive and block the ball. So I wish I knew that beforehand.
Yeah, Kai, you talked about your progression since high school, but take me back to when you were in high school and going through the recruiting process back in back in Jersey. What was that process like? Did you have a lot of different offers to choose from? And then what ultimately led to your decision?
So when I was a freshman in high school, I did a camp at University of Virginia. Loved the campus, loved everything about that place, and I committed about two weeks after I visited. So I was very young. I don't even think I'd played a high school baseball game yet. I was young when I committed, but I loved everything about Virginia, and I'm so happy I went there and got to go to Omaha twice. And then when the draft came around in high school, I had the decision to go to the draft or go to college. And I decided to opt out of the draft, and I was all in on going to college. I was a completely different prospect out of high school as I was college, high school compared to college. So, I mean, I just needed to develop a ton, and that was the main reason for that decision.
Okay. I love talking about catching. So I got to follow up. You talked about left knee down, right knee down. I think a lot of people hear one knee down and they think of it as kind of one thing, but it's actually left knee down, right knee down, kickstand versus, where you set your feet. Could you kind of go in a little bit, like when you say like left knee, right, it kind of depends on what you're trying to do a little bit, how you set up back there, doesn't it?
Correct. It really all depends on, for me at least, runners on base, which side of the plate I'm on. You have a knee down, but at the same time, you're trying to work on angles and glove shades, and it's all the little intricate details that really get you to be in the best position possible to receive. I've traditionally only been a left knee down kind of catcher, and this offseason, the right knee down is something I've been working on just to make it a little bit easier to throw runners out a second.
Hey, Kyle, I'm going to jump in here. So obviously we talked a lot when we had you on Foul Territory about the trade. Something I don't think we dove into a ton is, the now big three. And, it was a big four before you departed to the White Sox. Can you do your best Baseball America impression and give me the scouting report on, the three teammates of yours that should shine in the big leagues at some point with the Red Sox organization, maybe as soon as this year? Like maybe one thing at least on the field and then one thing personality-wise. I've spent a good amount of time actually with Marcelo Meyer. He can definitely talk your ear off in a good way. Seems like a guy that is fun to have a conversation with. But give me the goods on the three there, and Campbell and Anthony as well.
Yeah, so Roman Anthony is just – I don't know, is he still 19 or is he 20 now? But I just remember playing with him. He was the most mature 19-year-old I've ever played with. It's hard to imagine he's that young. I think he's 20 now, but it's unbelievable. And when you see him swing the bat, it's like you'd think he's 25, 26. So he's got crazy pop, and he's the man. Marcelo's butter in the infield, really good bat to ball, really good power, just like an all-around great ball player. And Christian Campbell, I think, is one of the best athletes I've ever been around. He's got all tools you'd want. And off the field, he's a really great guy. We were roommates after the season this year, and we went to the complex to get some bat speed training in, and we got really close. So, I mean, all those guys are going to be studs. They're all studs to begin with right now, too. So,
just like a manager needs to plan to get that perfect matchup in the late innings of a game, you need to have a strategy to protect you and your family's future. That's why long before they ever sponsored the Baseball America podcast, I used SelectQuote when I needed to find life insurance. It was fast, it was easy, and it gave me peace of mind that I was getting the right policy at the best price possible. SelectQuote is one of America's leading insurance brokers with nearly 40 years of experience, helping over 2 million customers find over $700 billion of coverage
since 1985. Other life insurance brokers offer impersonal, one-size-fits-all policies that may cost you more and cover you less. While SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents work for you to tailor a life insurance policy for your individual needs in as little as 15 minutes. You invest so much time to take care of yourself and to be the healthiest, best version of you. SelectQuote's exclusive policies can reward that effort. If you're in good health, they work for carriers to get you same-day coverage for up to $5 million with no medical exam required. And these policies are more affordable than you may think. You can get coverage for up to $1 million for as little as $20 per month. Head to selectquote.com and a licensed insurance agent will call you right away with the right policy for your life and your budget. SelectQuote, they shop, you save. Get the right insurance for you for less at selectquote.com/BA. Go to selectquote.com/BA today to get started. That's selectquote.com/BA.
So the thing I remember from Prospect Pad talking to some of your, you know, former teammates now, when they were talking about you kind of doing the same thing here, they were like that. They said basically that you need a crowbar to get you out of, you know, the cage and working and working and working. They're like, we need days off every now and then. Kyle never needs a day off. How do you kind of balance that? Because obviously, you know, the great thing about if you love hitting is you want to hit. But at the same time, if you're a catcher, you also just trying to stay fresh has got to be a challenge. Is that something that you have to kind of balance? Because if you had your way, you would just basically, you'd be taking swings, you know, hours a day.
Yeah. You know, I like to say, if you want to hit, you got to hit, you know what I mean? That's like my go-to saying. I did have to learn, especially later in the season this year, I got to get a routine down. I can't be in the cage for an hour and a half, 2 hours to get feeling good. So I had to condense it to 20, 30 minutes. So I'm, like you said, more fresh and feeling good. And that routine is what really elevated me in my last month in AAA and just implementing high T work, side flips and just little tiny things that gets my swing moving in the right direction, I think was the most important thing for me.
Yeah. Kyle, you mentioned some of the bat speed training work that you did with Christian Campbell. What did that entail? What kind of work did you do, and did you feel like you saw any effects or results with your swing or with your overall performance?
Yeah, I did notice I was hitting the ball harder the more I would do it. I was more of a, we call it the blue bat. It's the drop 10 bat, really light. It might even be a drop 12. It's a metal driveline bat, and it's really light. And some guys like to swing the heavier bat, but I'm more of a guy that likes to get moving fast early. Just kind of sets me up for success throughout the game and in getting good work in. So I like to just take, no matter what, every single day, swing that light blue bat and swing it as hard as I can. So.
Hey, Kyle, you're coming from a Red Sox organization that's done a really nice job of developing prospects lately, and the White Sox hope to be able to mimic that. So when guys show up and have conversations with you in spring training, they're going to ask you, like, what did you do with the Red Sox in terms of improvement, development, getting better? So what stood out? And also, did it change at all when there was, you know, somewhat of a new regime that took over with Craig Breslow? Or does that stuff kind of stay at the top and still you had the same kind of core principles that were being taught at the minor league level from, say, 2 years ago to this past season?
Yeah, from when I got there, I feel like the core principles stayed the same, and I really liked how simple they kept it. It was just swing the bat fast, and it's definitely a controllable. You can definitely work on that every single day. And once I figured out how to swing the bat fast and do it the right way, do it the way I want to and the way that works for me, that's when I really started to see a lot of success and change for better with my swing. And that, yeah, it's something that I want to take with me throughout my whole career. I think it's simple, and the simpler, the better. The more you can execute it, the simpler it is. So, yeah, really simple. Just swing the bat fast offensively.
So, Kyle, I did want to ask you, one of the other things that your teammates mentioned is that you were like, hey, you know, can I get down to Fort Myers, hit on the Tragic, you know, while I've got a day off here, a couple of days off and all. Have you gotten to hit off the Tragic? You know, and what is that like?
I love hitting off the Tragic. It's one of my favorite machines. It's you can get 10 live at bats, you get 40 live at bats within an hour. You know what I mean? So, and it's great. You can program it to mix pitches, and you get the live arm throwing you the ball. So I love hitting off the traject. I haven't hit off it in a while. I've been hitting off the home plate machine at home. It's a little bit similar. There's not a live arm, but it's still a tough machine to hit off of. And I really like challenge when I'm getting my work in. You know, it's not always about feeling good. It's about what do I need to do to improve, even though it's going to be difficult.
So we did want to finish up with, we're going to talk about college baseball afterwards. Obviously you had, you know, an illustrious college career. One of the things that, you know, we got ABCA coming up, the big coaches convention, talking about rules changes and all. One of the things we're talking about is, you know, obviously Major League Baseball, they've kind of banned the shift. And then there's talk about, you know, would we ever see something like that in college baseball? What's your kind of your sense? Like, would you have loved to have seen a shift ban when, you know, especially someone who might have hit into some shifts? Or do you think that that's kind of going a little too far for college baseball?
Well, that's a great question. When I was in college, they started to shift me. And the only way to get them not to shift me anymore is lay down a bunt down the third base side. And that's something we did a ton at University of Virginia. And we practiced it so much. Every time they shifted me, you're pretty much – there's a 99% chance I'm getting on base. So and because bunting is such a big part of college baseball, I don't know if they'll change it. But, I mean, we'll have to see. And like I said, like, if you can lay down a bunt at third base, it's really hard to shift someone like that.
Yeah, and I know your brother's at UVA right now. How much what's the outlook this year? How much college baseball are you able to watch of those guys?
I'm going to be watching them a ton. I can't wait. Got to shout out the UVA baseball team, man. Those guys are awesome, and I'm excited to watch them this year. So
yeah, you'll be locked in. I like that. Well, good luck to your brother, and obviously to you. Happy holidays. Good to see you again, Kyle. We'll see you in spring training, and thank you for joining us. Thanks for the time, man.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on.
Appreciate you. Kyle Teal joining us, Chicago White Sox catching prospect, just moved over the big prize in that Garrett Crochet trade with the Red Sox and the White Sox. All right, so Ben, we'll say bye to you and have a happy holiday, man. Good to see you too.
Thanks, guys. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year. All right. Newest member of the Baseball America fam. You want to give the introduction, JJ, to your new teammate?
Absolutely. So Jacob Rudner is our new college baseball national writer and hit the ground running basically on day one. He was like, okay, I've got these 11 stories I'm working on and I got another 20 that I want to be started on. And we already seen some of them, some of which we're going to talk about now. So we're excited to have Jacob Rudner join us. And one of the things that Jacob kind of started off, we've got, you know, ABCA coming up, the coaches convention. It's where a lot of kind of the discussion of what's going on, the path, the future of college baseball, which is really uncertain right now. And Jacob, one of the things that did jump out from that is the shift rule story that you talked about, that there's at least been discussion of, hey, will we ever see the shift ban come to college baseball? And the answer that you got kind of, it was one I hadn't really thought of until you got that answer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the overwhelming returns on being, you know, asked, hey, should there be a shift ban in college baseball was absolutely not. And not only did they think that it was going to be, you know, a detriment to the sport just in terms of slowing down or increasing the amount of offense that's being played right now, but they also felt that it was a danger to their student athletes. College fielders are not as advanced as professional fielders, and the exit velocities that we're seeing in college baseball right now are increasing steadily annually. I believe we saw 317 mile per hour exit velocities in Omaha alone last year. And these fielders are being asked to corral baseballs that are coming in like a bullet. So coaches not only don't think that it's necessary to have a shift ban, but they do think that the shift is something that's going to allow their players to be a little bit more safe when they're playing the field, especially with the baseball coming in as hot as it does.
I love how I put it is that basically it is a safety thing because some of these fielders just are not ones that you want to have. No, you've got to be in the dirt. And by the way, there's a 118 mile an hour missile coming at your head.
Well, you know, like one thing I thought was interesting was UCLA head coach John Savage told me, we have guys in the field who we feel as though we're putting in an advantageous situation. And there are already enough runs being scored throughout the sport of college baseball. To not allow those guys to be where the coaches tell them to go is something that he feels poses a danger. I believe it was him who said directly, you know, we can't afford to put our guys in a spot where they are going to have to field the ball coming in more quickly or they are going to have to be able to react quicker, because for the most part, they can't at this level, or they're still learning to be able to do it, you know, properly. So there is kind of a general sense from coaches across the country that a shift ban would be, you know, to the detriment of their players. They think that more runs are going to be scored as a result, and the combination of those things make it so it doesn't really make a lot of sense for the game at large.
Jacob, I'm not going to overlook how JJ said you have not one, not five, not eight, not nine, not 10, but 11 stories in the hopper. So I'm excited for that and hoping that maybe one of them has to do with the JUCO eligibility situation. So why don't you run through, you know, your thoughts on that and how do you see it playing out in college baseball?
Well, the story is live. And one thing that I thought was really interesting from this whole Diego Pavia Vanderbilt quarterback situation is that if it is to come to pass, it opens the door for athletes who play JUCO baseball to essentially start their D1 eligibility clock after they make the jump. So you could go play 2 years at a JUCO college, then get recruited to go play Division I and be a 20-year-old freshman who takes the field for the first time with 4 years to play. This stands to really disrupt what is the current form for roster building. It's a system that is already kind of in a state of flux with these new roster limits, 34-man limits, December 1st cut deadlines, and it's going to potentially phase out the younger crop of players, not necessarily the top prospect, because those guys are going to have a future home in college baseball almost no matter what, and that's something that I've heard from a lot of coaches who are anticipating a change where JUCO players are allowed to restart their eligibility clocks, but it's also going to phase out the intermediate freshmen. Where do those guys go? Do they have to go to JUCO and play two seasons? Is it also going to reset the draft clock? You know, I had one coach tell me that at the moment we have this age rush to become draft eligible and to insert your name into the professional baseball conversation. If there is more eligibility to be had at the college level, is there something to be said for making college rosters older, allowing players to develop more before they make the jump to professional baseball? And in what ways is that going to disrupt the flow of how rosters are built? There are a lot of coaches who said that they think it could be substantial, and maybe even we'll have to require some conversation in terms of mitigating it with roster sizes shrinking, but the pool of players starting to grow exponentially.
This is, I said on this show a couple of months ago that it's a terrible time to be a high school baseball player who's kind of rising into this because there's so much uncertainty. The rosters are getting smaller. There's more competition for those roster spots, all that. This just adds another complication. I think the other thing I should say is, and it's also a kind of a brutal time to be a head coach or a recruiting coordinator trying to make sense of all this. As Jacob mentioned, we're headed towards 34 player roster limits in Division I baseball. It was 40. So that's a significant, that's a 6-player reduction. You add this on top of it where all of a sudden you very well, players who kind of came in and you're like, okay, so this player is going to be here for this year, but this is their last year of eligibility. They might have 2 more years of eligibility after that. You have other players coming in. You're like trying to already fit it in the 34. The uncertainty that is kind of arises from this, Jacob, is like it's creating, I would say the biggest thing is everyone seems to feel like they don't know what the answers are and they don't even know who's going to answer the questions is the way I would put it. Is that fair?
Well, I think that's more than fair. And there are college coaches right now who would tell you that they don't know what the future is for their sport. There isn't really a sense of direction. And it goes far beyond just this Diego Pavia, JUCO, you know, player eligibility situation. I think that there's a sense that there isn't a sense of direction when it comes to NIL, how the revenue share process is going to impact baseball in addition to NIL. The transfer portal has generated a great sense of uncertainty throughout the college coaching community. And a lot of these guys have basically come back and said, we can start working with this as long as we know actually what's going to happen. And there is kind of a widespread belief that things are becoming more and more directionless as these new cases continue to arise. And the Pavia situation is more the latest example of that rather than something that's causing things to spiral to a place of unknown. It's just another factor, in my opinion.
Oh, fun drama going on with this situation. And obviously we'll learn more about it and you know where to go. Jacob will be all over this story. You'll see more updates on this via Baseball America website, social media accounts, etc. Storyline that'll continue into January. Jacob, welcome aboard, man. Congrats and looking forward to all the work that you bring to the college baseball scene.
I appreciate it, guys. It's fun to be a part of this.
Yeah, great to have you on, JJ. We had a great year, so happy new year to you. Next Hot Sheet show is January 6th. That's a Monday. The usual time will be live, so we appreciate, obviously, the partnership with Foul Territory and Baseball America, and we're going to produce a lot more awesome content in 2025.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great new year, and we will see you Monday, January 6th for another live episode. If you're catching this after the fact, rate, review on the podcast platform, subscribe to Baseball America YouTube channel and to BA itself. And again, thanks for following and watching all of the BA coverage in 2024.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.